This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Saturday Magazine starts now.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Saturday Magazine is Joy 94.9's longest running news and current affairs show. It's coming to you live right here from Melbourne, the world's most livable city with the world's most lovable Lord Mayor on the world's best LGBTI radio station. You can listen to us on radio, by streaming and of course via podcast until Apple ditch iTunes, then they'll do something else. And you can get us on Spotify. We are going to bring you an ever-changing mix of local and national news, current affairs and commentary, all framed within TASS's perspective. On behalf of Saturday Magazine, I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, future and emerging. I'd also like to pay my respects and honour the elders from our diverse LGBTIQ communities. Now,
good morning to you, Sally.
Good morning. It's lovely to be here, always.
Great to see you in the studio again.
Thank you. It's good to be in the studio because then I get to taste your wonderful baking.
Yes, well, it's lemon and coconut.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Well, not in the studio itself. Let's just be clear about that.
Oh, okay. Oh, you don't eat in the studio. Okay. Didn't realise that.
So, Sally, what have you been doing this morning?
Oh, this morning. What a great question. I've just come from synagogue,
because you look so fabulous,
actually.
As always.
Oh, that's so nice. I've come from synagogue. One of our friends, a good friend's son's, it's his bar mitzvah today, and it started this morning at synagogue with the tradition ceremony of the coming of age. Beautiful choir, lovely traditions, and then tonight there'll be a party. So it was a great start.
So it's actually an all-day event.
Well, this morning is the sort of the ceremony, as I said, the religious ceremony. That's the word I was looking for. And then tonight is a party and a celebration with lots of kids and lots of adults, and it'll be fabulous.
What happens during the day then? Do people just go home?
Oh, I'm not sure. You mean like a wedding, that proximity of the ceremony? I don't think it's quite like that, because the bar mitzvahs have happening at the normal Saturday morning service, and everybody that could come to be part of that did, but there'll be a much bigger crowd tonight at the party. What does that say about our community these days? But it is nice. Look, every religion has different ways in which they celebrate coming of age, and for Tiger this morning, that was a very special ceremony for him.
That's the young boy's name.
Yes, then. Tiger.
Obviously, it can't be a girl.
Could be.
Well, I think
no, that's a bat mitzvah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
that
only occurs in liberal synagogues, not on the more conservative side.
What, as opposed to a Labour synagogue?
The synagogue that you went to, I think, this morning is on the conservative spectrum.
Is that good? I'm not really up to speed with it all, but I was pleased to be invited and go along and see something that was very meaningful for Tiger and his family.
I went to my neighbour's daughter's bat mitzvah at Temple Beth Israel on Carlisle Street when she was 13 or 14. Mm. And I found it really fascinating. It actually took me back to my childhood of being at a Greek Orthodox church. You know, there were people chatting.
Lots of doors and things.
Well, there was so much commotion. I mean, it was like nobody was engaged in the service. People were more interested in socialising or catching up with someone, or I'll meet you outside in 2 minutes, or taking phone calls inside church, inside synagogue in this case. Mm. It was fascinating. And we had a real sense of community, spirit, engagement, participation. And everybody knew why they were there. Nobody was disrespectful. It was very respectful. I thought it was great. I loved it.
Well, I enjoyed it this morning too.
Now, I want to... there's something in particular I want to talk about. I want to talk about, at a federal level, a failure of leadership. from the government.
We usually get one of these, Sally. I think you're used to it now, aren't you?
We started off so light and fluffy.
You are used to this, aren't you?
I am.
A failure.
And I usually have no notice of what this editorial is going to be
about.
We'll
sit back, relax.
Yeah, I will.
A failure of leadership from the Prime Minister, from the opposition leader, on press freedom and the raids that the Australian Federal Police carried out on a News Corp journalist and the ABC, very strongly defended press freedom by Ita Buttrose. But it's the failure of leadership by our federal politicians that press freedom is integral to a fully functioning and engaging democracy. And basically, oh, well, you know, it's the law, the federal police are following the law. Yeah, guys, it's the law that you made, that you voted on, that you think everything that you can put under the interest of national security, you can throw our civil liberties in the toilet. And you don't want a free press. You'd probably like all of them. They'd probably like a press like North Korea, you know, or Russia, or China, right? None of these are functioning democracies, right? We like to think we're a functioning democracy. This is a huge threat to our democracy. And it's a failure of leadership from our federal government and the opposition. And frankly, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. And they sit back, you know, they leak to the media. They love, you know, that they can leak to the media and get stories about their opponents and about also people in their own parties. But, you know, this is about our right to know what they are up to. And they failed us. Dismally. Dismally. That's what I think.
And thus spoke Macca.
That's right. That's what I think.
Well, it'll be interesting to listen to Adele later with you in the discussion, which I'm sure there'll be a lot on that.
And,
it's certainly
Misha,
a worthwhile discussion.
And Misha. Misha's coming and Misha. In especially right, to talk Misha, about this subject.
So just imagine the Banking Royal Commission, right?
Did not happen. Would not have happened.
Would not have happened
Adele.
Without Adele's articles. The exposure of wage fraud. Now, just imagine that the government decided that these were matters of national security, right? They'd be knocking on Adele's door and going through her contact books. And, you know, don't forget, Adele, like a lot of others, journalists, has refused to provide her, you know, her contact books and her who she's been talking to and has risked going to jail. So the next step is, oh, what we do is, well, no, we don't break your door down. We actually come in to your place. Now, just imagine, Tass and Sally, if we were talking about we all became aware of some pretty serious corruption involving, let's just say, an important matter to the federal government. And people had given us documents. You know, Sally, how important whistleblowers are. And if we talked about that on air, right, we could actually have the situation where the buzzer on the front door goes here and a whole lot of federal police come in and tell everyone to step away from the computers. Right, we are going to access all your data and all your information and we're going to take it away. Just think about it. That's what we're facing. And it's not good, it's very bad, it's not acceptable, and it's a failure of leadership from our politicians. Because you know what? They actually don't believe in a transparent democracy. Because if they did, they'd be standing up and saying, you know what, the law is wrong, we need to change it.
A bit like Ita Buttrose did.
Yes, yeah. As Lord Mayor and as an elected official, but you know, you were elected in a open, transparent election, a battle of ideas. The ratepayers and residents of the City of Melbourne chose you as Lord Mayor. What's your views on press freedom?
Well, broadly, I think we all agree that press freedom is an absolute cornerstone or platform foundation for a democracy and certainly for how we've always operated in this country. And there are many laws that can be that exist, but of course it's always how they are applied and used from time to time. And the response of the public, of the media to the current situation is a really important debate because it expresses what our views are, what our values are, and what our beliefs are for now in terms of how those laws are being used. And so it's really important that this debate continues and that our politicians in Canberra listen to what we say, because it's for us to determine the sort of society that we want, and these sorts of situations really test that. So I absolutely agree. It's a discussion worth having, and I'll be interested to hear particular. I mean, there are so many stories that Adele's written, yeah. I know Misha's coming as well, but that have been absolutely reliant on the fact that our press needs to be able to operate with freedom and be able to be fearless,
yes,
as well. And unfortunately, these situations where powers are used often create, what would you say, reverberations.
They do.
Through industry and also through society. So
we've had a global response to this. Mm. I mean, there's the head of ABC, BBC in the UK actually came out and made a comment, and I heard somebody from Russia this morning even saying, "Be warned, beware."
And even Singapore, not known for its press freedom,
of course,
their national broadcaster. We put the spotlight on Australia again, and it's not good enough for ministers and the Prime Minister and others to say, oh, look, they're just, you know, enforcing the law. Yeah, well, they're doing it very diligently and proactively. I don't accept that the minister didn't know this was going to happen. That's not how this works. Right? The Australian Federal Police would not carry out these raids without letting the minister's office know. They say they let him know afterwards. Yeah, well, I don't believe you.
Well, the great thing about being in a democracy is that we're able to have these sorts of debates. Well, and if you don't agree with something, you are able to speak out fiercely and strongly about it. And so that's what people should do.
Now, something that I feel fiercely and strongly about is Highline. I saw a wonderful documentary about it on YouTube the other night I was watching. What a fantastic thing. I mean, I know you've seen it, and I just can't wait. I can't wait for Melbourne to have something like that.
Something that is so special. And look, I got to meet Rob Hammond, who's one of the founders of Highline, and it all started with that sense of really trying to connect people in neighbourhoods and bring them together in a special space and a place that everyone could enjoy. And their programming of events now on Highline, yes, is enormous.
And it's a tourist draw.
Tai Chi to markets, exactly. It's the number one tourist attraction, yeah, in New York now. But there are 32 different parks that they have within the Highline, yeah, Foundation now, yeah, and that key of connecting people, whether it's just that you can walk along it to connect you to a different part of the city, or you can connect with people by, yes, actually being on it and doing something together, I think is a really nice theme and absolutely appropriate for Melbourne.
So, you know, I know there's a process to go through, and the council's working through that. We're not talking here a lot of money, so if you're not getting enough, I say to up the top of the hill, hey Dan and Luxury Car Tax Palace, how about you tip in a little bit of money for this? This is your capital as well. You know, what are we talking here? 10 mil?
Oh, no, it'll be a lot more than that.
200?
I'd actually get your donation drive done first before you start asking
for any money on this.
No, it's a lot of money.
Maybe not billions, but at least certainly a billion. But you know, the other
it's
day...
It's going to be big.
I happened to be in Southgate the other day, mm, and I walked over that bridge towards Flinders Street Station. Mm. I'm not sure what the bridge is called, but that was just delightful.
Mm, the Evan Walker Bridge.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
it is a really lovely experience. And then there's the immigration stuff that, you know, that you see along the side, mm, and it was lovely and sunny, and you could stop and, you know, take a phone call and have a rest and enjoy the views.
You were down on Sandridge Bridge then. Did it have the sculptures on
it? Yes,
oh, yes,
yes.
So Sandridge, a bit further down. Lovely.
So
it is a good connection to the train station now, yeah, as well. It's all, yeah, been done really well, and still lots of work to come along that part of our river. It's such an important part of the city.
So what else has been happening, Sal?
Oh, look, it's another jam-packed week and so much to look forward to, but one of the thrills this week was I don't get to put the robes on very often, but it was fantastic to put the robes on for our biggest ever citizenship ceremony in Town Hall. And 300 people became Australian citizens from 54 different countries.
Wow.
And it's the energy and excitement and the pride and the joy in the room is it's completely uplifting. I have an enormous smile on my face for the entire time, and people take it really seriously. Mm. And everyone I spoke to, as I gave them their certificates after they've done the oath, just really spoke of their excitement and their pride and how thrilled they were. And of course, some of them have been here for quite a long time. Yeah. But it's that sense of going through a ceremony again where you actually confirm publicly that affirmation to our country. And it really means something to people.
You can call yourself an Australian now.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes me realise that for everybody born here, we really take that for granted. And yet for so many people, it's, you know, just a major thrill in their lives to be able to call themselves Australian. So, again, it makes me feel so grateful.
And, of course, those of us born here, we didn't get... Do they still get a little tree?
Yeah.
We don't get a little tree. We didn't get a little tree.
Oh, love. I'll get you a little tree. Yeah, okay.
I'll bring one with me next time and a flag.
but yeah, we do take it for granted. And, you know, for so many of these people, this is life-changing for them.
Hmm.
You know, it acknowledges that, you know, they wanted to live in Australia and Australia wants them here.
Hmm. And they're in a country where they can criticise the government for utilising laws to curb the journalistic freedoms, for example, which is fantastic.
As long as they're not a journalist writing about national security, they're all right, you know, for now.
Anyway, so that was absolutely fantastic as an example of some of the fabulous things that have happened this week.
Now, there was a dinner.
We've had an iftar dinner during Ramadan as well. And last year I'd just become Lord Mayor and we were able to organise just a small dinner with the Islamic Council of Victoria. And we had a group of about 10 people sitting around a table last year, and we decided that it was important and something that we could make bigger and better. And this year I think we had about 60 people, and we're working on how we can really open it up for next year. It's one of those important times of the year for our Muslim community, and to be able to sit down and break bread at the end of a day of fasting. I didn't fast. I did try, but I didn't get... It's a difficult thing to do, and I really admire the commitment that they make. But to sit down, the whole point is sitting down with different people at the end of a day, having a conversation and having that sense of community and friendship. And with it comes a sense of understanding.
Yes.
And from that, I believe we can build a lot more positivity in the community.
And
so
Sally,
it was wonderful.
Is there a particular type of cuisine that you have to have at an iftar dinner?
Maybe that's the biggest motivation. You don't have to.
Right.
But we had a magnificent feast of food, mostly African style food, and it's so tasty and all the spices, and it was really delicious. But that's not why I was there, of course. It was to share that sense of community.
No, but it is part of it.
The food is good.
So there isn't...
And you start with dates because you're so hungry at the end of the day. If you've been fasting, you get a little sugar burst, and it's such a nice way to start.
Okay,
glass of water and
so
dates.
There is a bit of a tradition around what you do eat, a bit like a Christmas dinner or a
Exactly,
Shabbat,
you're right, yeah.
Or a Greek Orthodox Easter lunch.
Well, tell us. Yes. That would be full of food.
Always lamb. Always lamb.
On the spit.
Usually on the spit, and if you can't, you just roast it. But usually the feast begins at midnight after you've been to church.
Oh.
So once Christ has risen at midnight on the Saturday night...
Is that adjusted for daylight saving?
And you light your... Yes. And you light your candle, you go home, and you are met at home by your mum, who'll offer you a shot of ouzo.
Oh,
we used to do this as kids, a little shot of ouzo. And then we'd sit down to a soup, usually a chicken soup, and then a roast.
At midnight?
At midnight.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we'd all have a big sleep and we'd wake up and there's Dad in the backyard, lighting the coals, getting the lamb ready for the roast.
You've just had a roast.
Well, that was midnight. This is lunch.
Wow. I love it.
Now, we've actually got two messages, Tess.
We have.
Would you like to read them out?
So what's the second one? So I haven't seen that. Well done, Macca, re-comments on press, lack of freedom. The international response has been a huge eye-opener. Other countries have mass protests over less infringements on rights than us. Aussies take everything for granted and it can slip away at a time so easily. This is Mez, member number 7760. Thank you, Mez. And the other message is from Anna Coates, who says, what has happened to the ATO whistleblower? And these raids, we will be getting too scared to do anything. You risk depression, long-time unemployment and jail. Very sobering. Right up there with you, and don't dob... And you don't dob in for bullying, any sexual harassment. The remedy is worse than the crime.
And this is where Adele was on 7:30 report about this during the week. A whistleblower in the tax office around their debt collection techniques and garnishing of wages and particularly around business. And he actually went through the internal process at the tax office. They did nothing. He then left the tax office and gave information to Adele and others, and she wrote about it. He's been charged and 66 offences. And the possible sentence, if he's found guilty, will total 166 years. Ivan Milat got 140. So the tax office, who this week put out a call for people to report instances of the cash economy and people cheating on their taxes, right? They want us to whistleblow. They won't accept whistleblowers in their own organisation. They're about as transparent as a bit of 4B2. And that's what they actually need whacked on the back of the head. They need to be whacked on the back of the head with that. And I know what I'm saying. The tax office, you're a disgrace. You are pathetic and you're hypocritical and you want us to be whistleblowers, but you won't allow them in your own ranks.
So out there in our listener land, if you are listening in, that was Macca having rant number two.
Yeah. They know my tax file number. They already love looking at my taxes.
Sally, I'm going to change the subject. Yes. Built to rent. What is Built to Rent?
Oh, well, we're really excited because it was announced this week that Melbourne will get its first Built to Rent project in our Queen Victoria Market precinct. And basically, it's a new type of rental offer. And the idea is that an apartment building is owned by one owner. So yeah. The institution, in this case, it's going to be Mirvac, retains ownership of all of the apartments and rents all of them out. And the reason this makes a difference is because, firstly, in building it, it's being built for renters and it's also being built for long-term hold, which means normally that you get better quality, that the institution's thinking about how to keep bills down, how to keep, to make sure that it wears well. And then because there's the one owner in the entire building, they often provide all sorts of other services that really help the community that live within the building. For tenants, it normally means a completely different sense of security around tenure because you haven't got a whole lot of individual owners that might change their mind on whether they're going to have as an investment or sell it or move in themselves, all those sorts of things. It is purpose-built for renting. And normally in these buildings as well, tenants are encouraged to have long-term leases.
Yes.
And therefore it's things like putting paintings on walls, having pets, all those sorts of things become part of that renter community, and everybody in there is a renter. And the examples from overseas have been incredibly positive. So in the US, it's actually the fastest growing housing phenomenon in the UK at the moment, build to rent, and it has fantastic outcomes for everybody. There are it's a growing cohort of people that want to rent and rent for life, and some of that is by choice and some of that is because they've been priced out of the market in terms of buying. But the fact is, when you have great product like this, it's a really good option.
So it's no different to social housing. The difference is that this is a private owner as opposed to a community or a public owner.
In a sense, but it's done. They're going to be beautiful apartments. They're done at market, if you like. So it's a market offering. It's not subsidised in any way. It is a new rental product in the private market.
And the difference is, Tass, is obviously there are some tax concessions available.
For the owner?
For the owner. Of course, they get to depreciate the building, but they're building it on the basis that this property is going to be tenanted for its life. And the ability of people to take longer-term leases, they might be, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, with not automatic renewal, but the ability to renew. And it focuses the building on that market. And it is, you know, and the difference between that and, I suppose, the social housing or the housing cooperatives is it needs to earn a rate of return to justify the investment. So even taking into account the tax concessions and other matters, it needs, you know, at the end of the day, capital needs to get a return. And, you know, some of these developers have actually worked out if you build it for rent, one, your costs become more consistent. The ability to design it specifically for that market, yes, rather than it being compromised. So there are some economies that they can get. And, you know, the feeling that it will give, you know, to those tenants is great. And you're going to see increasing investment, not just by the developers, but some of the large super funds are looking at this very, very closely.
Yeah.
Because it provides not a stellar return, but most of them are working hopefully on around 4% net. And, you know, that's a good, consistent return. And it also helps alleviate some of the housing issues that we have. Granted, they're not really low cost, a lot of these, but, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, Mac. I've been a property owner and an investor in my time. And I've always valued long-term tenancies.
Yeah, exactly.
And my interest in that is security of tenure for the tenant, security of income for myself. We don't have to be piss-farting around with, you know, advertising and letting and all that sort of stuff. But the resistance doesn't come from the tenant.
It comes
from the agent. They make their money through their annual review process. And it took me a long time to work through that.
Yeah, and you know, the annual review, but also, you know, vetting and everything, a new tenant. I mean, before Jonathan and I moved to Pascoe, where we bought, we lived in a rented property in Mooney Ponds. And we were there, well, I was there 12 years. The landlord was great, right? But not everyone has that experience.
Exactly.
Right. And he valued having a tenant there that was long-term, that there wasn't going to be potential little bits of vacancies, that he wasn't up for these, you know, annual, or, you know, getting a new tenant every year, every 2 years. It makes a lot of sense.
It does. It completely changes the dynamic. So for the developer, instead of this being a transaction, you build something, sell all the units of apartments off and walk away, this is a long-term investment by the developer. It's about an ongoing income stream. But you have a consistency of offering, if you like, through the building, in that if you go to any other sort of apartment building around town, you're going to, they're all strata titled and sold off. You're going to have a mixture of owner occupiers. You're going to have a mixture of renters. You're going to have a mixture of people who short term rent them. You're going to have absentee, all of those sorts of things. And all of the different decision making that goes on within that building also means that there's inconsistent investment in the common areas, in security, in services. For a build to rent, there is the one owner doing its best to make it the most attractive proposition
for
renters.
So is there anything that prevents the owner from then, in 10 years' time, selling some of those units?
Well, they'd have to be strated.
Yeah, so it's all on one title. That's right. Yeah, so it's quite a big deal.
Right.
Yeah. Do they get, and you may not know this, Sally, so let's assume there's 100 apartments. And in a normal case, there'd be 100 owners and 100 rate notices. Is there one rate notice
that's a good question.
For this building? Does the council rate it as a whole or are they rated as individual units?
Well, it's our first one. It's a very good question.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's all on the one title. So it'll be one rate notice. That's right.
Yeah.
And look, we've actually been really trying to encourage this as a new asset class in Australia for some time now. we have been working with the state government and the federal government, the Royal We, all sorts of people around town to try to actually introduce some tax incentives for build to rent to try to have more of them built. And that's certainly what's happened in the United States and in the UK. We haven't got there yet, really, on specific tax concessions for build to rent, but we're hoping that that will come, because it's not just about announcing one. It's actually that we would like a lot of them, because they're a great proposition for rental. And the fact is that when we do our surveying of the population of Melbourne, the most stressed cohort at the moment are renters.
Renters, yeah.
Because it is so difficult to find it a is. Place, and it's so difficult to find a place within different price brackets. And if we can get supply of really good product like this, it's a bonus for everyone.
Great initiative.
It's a wonderful place that it's going.
Yes, it is, near the market.
A new community and a reinvested, reinvigorated market. It's very exciting for everyone.
Sally, what's the latest with the market development?
Oh, well, as you know, I'm very excited about Christmas in July, firstly. Yes. Starts not too far away, 3 weeks, and we kick off with all those wonderful Christmas celebrations. Oh, the glühwein. One of the things I loved about living in London was Christmas. Even though it was dark at 3 o'clock, the sense of, I call it real Christmas celebrations, the decorations, and of course the lights could come on early, the little markets and keeping warm, and of course the food. And the glühwein, there's a common theme with me, isn't there?
Yeah.
Anyway, that is all going to be recreated up at Queen Victoria Market, and we encourage people to come along because they'll also be able to buy a lot of their decorations as we head into planning for Christmas. I know, Paul, you're planning Christmas already, Christmas in July. So that's great. But as you're implying, Tass, we have started a lot of the work up there as well in terms of preserving the heritage sheds, a huge amount of work going into some of the deterioration that has occurred over time to the heritage sheds, and then importantly the Queen Street extension there, which sits between the lower and upper market, that's been pedestrianised, and a whole lot of new chairs and fruit trees and herbs. And you're allowed to pick the fruit and take the herbs, and you can sit and enjoy in the winter sunshine on our lovely benches.
I don't mind the cars being taken from there.
Oh, good.
It was always a bit strange driving.
That's because you don't shop at the market.
But driving up that little bit, it was always a bit treacherous. You know, it was a bit dangerous. It really was. So good on you.
I think we should go to the night market.
Okay.
Macca, you and I?
All right.
We can go and enjoy it. I can show you how wonderful the market is. And
my advice is get there before six.
The night market?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because then you have to deal with queues.
Yes, after that. Well, just go to the places that don't have a queue. They're good too. Yeah.
I can't find them. I'm serious. At 7
o'clock, that's true. It does get very busy.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Pumping.
Yeah.
And you throw in a bit of entertainment on top
have
of that.
Yeah, have a dance.
And it's a fantastic
night. It is.
I mean, if you want a really good, you know, cheap, what's happening in Melbourne sort of evening, Wednesday night at the night market. It's a lot of fun.
I agree. And look, we've redone String Bean Alley as well. We'll be doing a proper opening towards the end of the month, but a whole lot of new tenants have gone in there, and very much that maker's market sort of feel. So really adding to the vibrancy of the offer there for shoppers.
Now, we're nearly out of time.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, that went really quickly.
Oh, we can keep going. We're going to get Adele Ferguson on the phone in a moment. So, Sal, what's on for the rest of the weekend?
Well, I know I'm being kicked out, aren't I?
Oh, you're welcome.
Adele is a star. She is a Gold Walkley Award winner, as you said at the start.
You're very welcome.
And I'll be listening
in.
For the rest of the weekend, lots of family activities. I've got a party tonight. We've got the football, of course, for Fight MND, particularly Collingwood versus Melbourne. I saw Neil Danaher during the week. He is... I mean, he is so inspiring.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, so many people are faced with these decisions in their life at a time of crisis, and he's absolutely stepped up and said, despite everything he's going through, he is really doing an incredible job raising funds and awareness. and still gives great hugs as well, which is fantastic. So football on Monday, and my son's actually home from overseas for 2 weeks. He studies in the US, and he's going to spend the American summer, or the Northern Hemisphere summer, in Tokyo. So I'm spending as much time as I can with him, and heading off to lunch at the wonderful D'Estasio Sitter. Have you been there yet?
No, I haven't.
Did I say that right? Probably not.
Looking forward to it, though.
Anyway, it's really fab. So we're having family lunch there today, and I can't wait.
Gorgeous. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you, Dave. Lovely to see you. Thank you for coming
into the studio again.
Enjoy the long weekend.
See you in a few weeks' time.
You will.
Cheers.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.